Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio. And I apologize, we seem to have gotten off and had a little bit of a problem for some reason over the night. Anyway, it's time now for Medicine on Call. Dr. George is in a traffic situation, I'm afraid, and is on her way. Her guest is Dr. Marilyn Singleton. And we're expecting Dr. Singleton to be calling in momentarily. Look forward to that. Medicine on Call is a very unique show, and Dr. George has been doing an outstanding job for literally months and months, years at this point, in getting the word out that there's something terribly wrong with our system. And the terribly wrong with our system is Obamacare that is going into effect more and more daily, as a matter of fact. And with the fact that we are being taken advantage of, there is no question about it. It is bad. It is getting worse. And unfortunately, we're not doing a whole lot about it. With that being said, Dr. George has been, as I mentioned, doing an outstanding job in bringing these facts to everyone's attention that there are problems. So with that being said, we're looking forward to Dr. Singleton calling in momentarily, and Dr. George is on her way in. She should be here again very shortly. We apologize for the traffic in Atlanta. That's about as good as we can do. While we're waiting on them, let's play a couple of things. Dr. George has some wonderful tips for health. We'll play a couple of those, and then we'll be back to you momentarily. You're listening to America's Web Radio. We appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be back very shortly. So thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that snoring can lead to chronic health problems? Snoring can be a sign of sleep apnea. Snoring is simply noisy breathing that can disturb those around you. However, sleep apnea is a serious condition that leads to a decrease in oxygen in the blood. The brain and the heart are two organs that depend on oxygen to function well. Studies have shown that a lack of oxygen at night leads to weight gain, problems with memory and concentration, depression, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, and stroke. There are several ways to decrease snoring. For example, lose weight if you are overweight. Avoid alcohol at least 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. Stop smoking. Control nasal allergies to things such as dust and mold. And avoid eating dairy products such as milk and cheese. If you think you have sleep apnea, you should see a doctor to be evaluated. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Have you heard of quantitative fluid analysis? Commonly called QFA, this test assesses your body at a cellular level and gives insight into your illness. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center offers the QFA, an FDA-approved test that can often provide early diagnosis of conditions before they can be detected with other tests. Dr. Elena George believes in an integrative approach to medicine. She believes in treating the problem and not the symptom. Following a review of your results, Dr. George will suggest treatment approaches such as nutritional counseling and or the use of pharmaceutical-grade enzymes and nutritional supplements. Surgery and prescription medication will be recommended only when necessary. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment and mention that you heard this ad on Radio Sandy Springs and get 10% off of QFA testing.
And we're glad to have you listening to America's Web Radio. And we do have Dr. George is here, and she's going to give Dr. Singleton a call, I guess, or email her or something. Anyway, we're expecting Dr. Singleton to call in momentarily. You know, she is not only an anesthesiologist, but also is an attorney, which I think is just absolutely, you know, that lady is smart. Wow.
I think in order to practice medicine, it's you got to have all the ammunition possible. So I totally respect where she's coming from.
Oh, yeah. It's the way things are going down now. And would you say, Dr. George, that you know, everybody was shooting for 2014, but Obamacare and the travesties of Obamacare are already setting in. Is that a...
You know, this is... Everybody's keyed in on the bill, and it is horrendous. It's the worst thing I've ever seen or read in my entire life. But I have to tell you that the movement towards this has been going on well in advance. Obamacare is just some sort of, you know, stamp on the direction that medicine has been going. I talked about it before, but there's something called ICD-10, which is the coding system, the next generation of the coding system. And it was basically birthed from the UN and the World Health Organization. So it's globalism attached to medicine. Dr. Singleton, when she comes on, will be talking about how that ICD-10 is going to essentially change. I can't even say that. Medicare's been doing this, but it's going to actually make it, you know, it's going to ingrain the direction that Medicare has been going. They've been paying less and less for more and more, essentially. And that's what's happened to private doctors. You know, we've had bundling happen where, and that generally means that you get paid one lump sum for no matter what you do, whether it's spending 2 hours with a patient, whether it's spending 5 minutes with a patient. And this is going to put bundling on a whole new level. So it'll be based on time, not on quality. And I can tell you, people are human. And the doctors who have left Medicare, like myself, are the ones who decided, I can't stint on my patient. I don't think it's good medicine. I will not have somebody dictating to me how to treat, what my patient and I decide should be the treatment protocol. Nobody gets to decide that. And I saw the writing on the wall and I left it. There's thousands of doctors like myself who've done the exact same thing. What you're left with now is a system where you've got, and I talk about it all the time, but it's actually becoming so true and so pervasive that I think everybody's probably seeing it now. The structure of medicine is a hierarchy now, where the doctors are the administrators, basically. They come in and they co-sign. They come in and they sign a prescription after the PA or the nurse practitioner has seen the patient. Worst case scenario, they never see the patient. They sign off on the chart and never even know what the patient looks like. You know, that's just unacceptable. And that's because of all of this nonsense that Medicare has put into place. And that means your time is worth, your expertise is worth nothing. Your time and your talent belongs to us. If you don't like it, then if you try to go around it, we're going to put you in jail or fine you $25,000 in occurrence. You know, it's just, it's pretty outrageous. And ICD-10 is that in a nutshell.
You know, I was just thinking as you were speaking that this whole thing, and I was imagining me or other folks busting into a doctor's office and say, look, I want the attention I'm paying for or that I deserve. You know, and you put all of these things together, the higher taxes, the waiting in line at the airport, you add all of these things up. And our system has been, just like you said, failing more and more over the years. It hadn't just happened. A lot of a lot of things seem to be coming to a head right mm-hmm. now. But it's almost like everything is pointing us into a fight. You know, I can't. It's like you're waiting in line to. I can remember waiting in line to vote. I can remember waiting in line as a child to get a polio vaccine. Mm-hmm. Good, bad, or indifferent. But, you know, our society is not good for waiting in line like a bunch of sheep to slaughter. However, I think we're turning into that.
I agree.
But do you see all of these different avenues, medicine, banking, economy, food. It may be that we're in line like the Russians used to be to get a loaf of bread.
That's coming.
Do you see this as a plan to get us to fight amongst ourselves and?
Well, actually, I see it that the end game is to dominate, and it's to control. Now, if that means you have to go through people getting into the streets and becoming finally taking their control back, I think that's a means to an end. They're preparing for that, actually. Why would the Homeland Security buy over a billion bullets in the last buyback or buyout? I mean, either they're trying to put gun manufacturers out of business, make sure there's no stock to sell to the populace, or they're ready for something. You know, this is not...
How pissed off do you get when you're in line to go to the theater or something and somebody cuts in line? You want to go shoot the person.
Well, I'm not pleased. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think it's really important now, more than ever, to stop buying into the mindset that you're a victim. That's what this is about. It's about getting you to the point that you're like, why bother? Why try? It's just me. I'm the only person who thinks this way, and so I'm just going to go along. It's overwhelming helplessness, and it's everybody telling you you should disarm, give up, let the government take care of you. You know, you can't protect yourself. We'll protect you. You can't, you know, educate your children. Let the government start educating them from preschool. What is that? Head Start, which they want to have to be a government program. You know, you can't buy 2-liter sodas anymore. You can't. I mean, it's just, where does it stop? And where do people, instead of there being in their haze of watching an Oscar or caring what haircut somebody has, this is my mantra. Does it put food on my table? Does it help me prepare myself to be safe? You know, does it fulfill me in any way that's about me taking care of myself and my family? And if the answer is no, then you need to let it go. You know, what happens with Snooki and JWoww does not put food on your table. You know, getting really bent out of shape because some moron guy, you know, starts dating somebody online that he'd never met. That was the story for about a week when that guy was duped by that internet scam.
Oh, that football, the Notre Dame.
Who cares?
Yeah.
He's an idiot, really. I mean, this is not something that's going to change your quality of life. This really doesn't affect you in any material way, but people are so caught up with things that are outside themselves. That is the first thing I think that people need to decide. Unplug from things that are negative, that are designed to disempower you, and designed to control you. You have to take a step back, turn the TV off, off the internet long enough to realize that, I think.
I'd like to put one thing forward, too, and we're sort of behind the scenes working on this. Oops, we need to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you my great idea that, you know, people, we've got to get back to the real story and real news. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Elena George right after this.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like. You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio and Medicine on Call. It's Dr. George. We are about to, I think, get our guest on the from California to come in on our show, Dr. Singleton. Hey, Dr. Singleton, thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you hear me?
No, barely. Very soft.
Okay, how about now?
Yes, I can hear you better.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's with a live show, you just have to roll with it. So we were giving you a nice little preview, our listeners' preview.
The worst of it is, I was sitting here staring at the clock, and I just think my brain had it at 6:55,
No problem at all. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself so our guests can get reoriented?
Okay. I'm by trade an anesthesiologist, and I went to Stanford for college and UCSF for medical school. Started off in surgery and then went back to Boston for anesthesia. After about over 20 years in the operating room, in the 90s, when I really wanted to do something about healthcare issues, I decided I should go to law school so I would know what I was talking about. So I went to UC Berkeley Law School and took a lot of administrative law and constitutional law courses so I would learn the best I could. And then worked at the National Health Law Project and worked in health and insurance law and still was doing anesthesia. And then finally, in the early 2000s, I retired out of the operating room.
So your foundation is definitely not only in clinical but policy as well.
Yes.
So, you know, give us your take on what happened when the Clinton doctrine started to, you know, they started that healthcare reform. What did you think of that? Because to me, Obamacare is a little bit of that, maybe not as aggressive in terms of market pressures, but it's still having the same effect.
One thing, the whole healthcare reform thing has been going on for years, and it's only because doctors and various organizations have been vocal about trying to keep private practice of medicine, mm-hmm. and were quite vocal in 92 and 93 during the Hillary Clinton mess. And fortunately, she'd made a big mistake by trying to keep it secret, and that got various people, not beyond physicians, concerned. This whole idea of secrecy in developing something that's going to affect one-fifth of the economy mm-hmm. turns people off, plain and simple. So as the years go by and there were all these thoughts of health care reform, which really is sort of a nebulous term because they never name exactly what they're reforming, mm-hmm. When Obama came around, he was the perfect person to do it.
So he put a face on it that was pretty benign. You know, you use the argument that the children aren't covered, and if you have a devastating illness, you're not covered. I mean, a lot of the rhetoric wasn't quite true, because if you go into an emergency room, no matter whether you're a citizen, non-citizen, you can pay or you can't, they have to treat you. And it made it sound like you're dying on the streets if you don't have insurance.
Absolutely. And some of the things they said were just not true anyway. When they said you won't lose your insurance if you get sick. Well, in 1997, as part of the HIPAA regulations, it said it outlawed rescission of insurance policies. Plain and simple, the language is clear. So a lot of political rhetoric just fooled people. And sadly, most people don't know all these details.
No.
So it's the problem is having politics rule public policy. And politics was what it was all about, and not good public policy.
I think you're right on track, and I think that's still the case. Politics runs everything, and so does cronyism. So, I mean, I was struck when I remember being a resident or a medical school / resident when Hillary Care was coming around, and being in the OR and the doctor saying, medical student, if this passes, you will no longer practice medicine the way you thought that you're training to practice now. And I kind of poo-pooed it, but they were absolutely right. I mean, just the thought of that pushed medicine, in my opinion, in a direction that it, out of fear, that it otherwise wouldn't have gone. And then that set the stepping stones for where we are now. Now, your article talks about Medicare, and Medicare is the underpinning, which people, maybe you might be able to explain that to the folks that are listening, but Medicare is the underpinning of insurance, of cost of health care, and of pricing of health care. How do these Medicare changes that are on the table now, how does that change healthcare as we know it? I can say it, but I think that you understand it from a different perspective.
One thing that in the insurance business, everyone knows as Medicare goes, so goes the rest of the insurance business. Medicare sets forth policies, and because they can get away with it, then the insurance companies will pick up those same policies, various things that Medicare doesn't pay for and this type of thing. The insurance companies say, well, Medicare doesn't pay for it, so we won't either.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the government knows, they have physicians over a barrel with Medicare. When physicians started taking it early on because it seemed like a good idea at the time, and no one wants older folks to suffer, this is the perfect foil. Just like you mentioned that all the rhetoric was about the children, that when you start talking about, oh, how can you deny seniors care? They've worked all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, we want to take care of seniors, and the bureaucrats know that. And so they can make changes to Medicare that then get picked up as general public policy. This is what happened with the hospital payment system, so-called DRGs, diagnosis-related groups, where the hospital is paid one price per diagnosis, no matter how much care that patient receives. Just think about what that does. A hospital has to stay alive financially, and a hospital can only give so much free care. And whether it's active or passive, it becomes a culture of cutting corners, even though the government says we want you to show that you're still giving quality. So patients were discharged sooner, they were coming back in, and then the government comes up, well, wait a minute, we can't have these patients coming back in, and then the hospital charging us again because the patient came back in with the same diagnosis. So then they started giving a bonus if your patients didn't come back in 30 days, and now the money is subtracted. And there's certain things that if that happened to the patient in the hospital will not get paid at all. Certain complications they decided are avoidable, and the hospital won't get paid at all. And the new round of these avoidable complications, it shocked me, a pulmonary embolus is on there. Well, my husband had a pulmonary embolus sitting in the living room. So how could you not pay the hospital just because a patient got a pulmonary embolus while they were in the hospital?
It's true.
It's, you know, to me, it's appalling. It takes away what medicine really is, what medical care really is. Medical care is looking at individual patients as individual people. And otherwise, we don't need doctors. We could have robots just looking at algorithms. Everyone is different.
Well, I think you hit on one of the tenets of the Obamacare system that just I find that I can't practice medicine if it totally takes hold. And you talked exactly about what the problem is. It's algorithm-driven. It is by robots. If you want to think about it in terms of training, you know, you have the people who are least trained taking on the front line of care. I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago, and I thought I was talking with the nurse, and I was actually talking with the nurse technician. I mean, they were talking about techs, and everybody that's around the patient is the least trained of them. It's not the registered nurse anymore. She's really a case manager now or doing some administrative academic stuff. And it's the people who have the least clinical training who are taking blood pressures, who are on the front line of care. I mean, that's not what a hospital is supposed to be about. And the doctors rarely come around. I mean, I'm getting consults from nurses, and the doctor never talks to me, and it's impossible to find them. That's now how I trained. And that, to me, is just conveyor belt medicine that's moved from the office setting into the hospital setting.
One of the things I find fascinating along those lines when you talk about people not talking to each other is the introduction of the electronic health records.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are some good things about having computerized records. The lab data is in there, so lab data won't get repeated if somebody loses the lab slip and various things like this. However, now they've looked at some history on the records, and they found that, one, records that have the point-and-click, people are doing point-and-click and not actually looking at the history. They're just doing a cut-and-paste of the old history and plopping it in and whenever the patient has a new incident. And people reading the records still don't know what's wrong with the patient, and they still end up having to pick up the telephone and call somebody and say, what's wrong with them now? And I think this is, you're talking about what happened to people talking with each other.
Oh, yeah. There's none of that anymore. I mean, you add, that's a great segue. Let's take a small break and come back and talk about EMRs, electronic medical records, and how that changes medicine. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know skipping doses of medication can be dangerous? If you have a chronic medical condition like diabetes or high blood pressure, it's important to take the medication prescribed by your physician. It is also important to remember that although you take a medicine to treat a condition, it is not a cure for the underlying medical condition. It is used to control it. For example, taking medication for diabetes will lower your blood sugar. However, if you stop taking the medication, the sugar will rise again. Changes in both diet and lifestyle, like adding exercise to your routine, are equally important. Working with your physician by following his or her recommendations is the key to controlling your disease and maintaining your health. Ask questions if you don't understand something. Taking control of your health is the key to wellness. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Moms, dads, listen to my radio program, Homeschooling for Today, on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you'll learn all about how to homeschool on America's Web Radio.
At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, they provide better quality care. They believe that excellent medical care is a right and not a privilege. They are concerned that the current economy has forced people to sacrifice their health. They have therefore reduced their prices to make it more affordable. They will continue to provide state-of-the-art care. They continue to believe that patient care counts above all else. Peachtree ENT Center, concierge medicine without the concierge price. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment or for more information. They are located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest, Suite 260 North Tower, 2 blocks south of Piedmont Hospital.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking today with Dr. Marilyn Singleton of the AAPS, and we're talking about Medicare and basically guidelines that have come online that are not patient-friendly, not doctor-friendly, and certainly not going to advance healthcare and in a way that we want it to be advanced as doctors and patients. Now, Dr. Singleton, before the break, we were talking about the electronic medical record system, and I was telling my producer in the break that I saw a patient in consult in the hospital. The consult took about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and it took me 45 minutes to finish the consultation note because I had to type it in manually into their electronic medical record system. And it doesn't say, I mean, that's me, and I'm pretty fast, and I'm pretty thorough, but I can imagine most docs cutting and pasting, you know, having a template and just to get it done. And it's not about remembering what you saw. It's about just getting it on the piece of code and moving on.
Yes. It's one of those things, again, it's very good in theory, but in practice, nurses are certainly complaining. There's some good things. I'm not completely knocking the concept, mm-hmm. and certainly you don't have to worry about reading someone's writing, but... There certainly are problems, and I don't know if it's the software or just the concept, that in a moment-to-moment business like medicine, doing that electronic record might not be the ideal way to record notes in all situations.
I think you're right. It's about the personal touch. I know you remember, too, when you went into medical practice, picking up a phone or getting a call from a colleague calling in a surgical consult or calling in an anesthesia consult, and you're being able to actually discuss the patient real time, get the nuances, understand the urgency or lack thereof from the doctor, him or herself. That's the difference between walking into a patient room with some foreknowledge, you know, some ammunition about knowing a patient better than you otherwise would have, because it's not your patient generally. You're coming in and you're making decisions on the fly. These are all really subtle pieces of healthcare that make it unique. That all goes away when you get a call from someone who's, I don't know why I'm calling the consult, it's just ear pain. And then you have to go and start from scratch. You can't get in touch with the person. The patient doesn't know what's going on. It's just a recipe for poor medical care. And it's expensive. I don't know if you know about the pricing for the EMRs, but I know the IT department that they have to hire to run it, to maintain it, gets paid a ton of money. And to me, that's being pulled from patient care. It has to be.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And there's whole medical directors of IT now, who coordinate all this, and not to mention in a private office, the base price is $44,000. The government is trying to give incentives, giving you a break if you see more Medicaid patients and whatnot. But the thing that also bothers me about them is the effect on patients. Many people say they really don't like the idea of walking into an office and there's the doctor with the little laptop mm-hmm. sitting in front of him or her, mm-hmm. furiously typing down every word. I wonder how many things patients aren't telling their doctors because it's immediately etched in stone. In contrast to when you're taking notes or just listening. And I remember many a time in the 80s when so many people snorted cocaine, and I really needed to know, did they do that? Mm-hmm. The pen would go down. It's like, I'm not taking this note, but I need to know. And I don't think people get that feeling that what they're about to say is a real secret when there's a computer screen sitting right there.
Well, it's not, actually, because if it gets logged into the EMR, the human health secretary, the insurance companies, everybody's, who knows what other members of the government is going to have access to your health records. That's pretty scary, or a hacker for that matter, who can hack into the to database of the hospital. So potentially, whatever you say, it's just like on the internet, may never be really private. That's pretty frightening.
It is frightening. And it bothers me because if patients don't feel they can tell you the truth, imagine the things that we could miss, the drug interactions, mm-hmm. complications that could occur. That very famous death of someone in New York that actually spearheaded residents having shorter hours. Partially the problem was the person didn't say they were on a certain drug. They were given Demerol, and they had a very bad reaction. And I just think that people, and a lot of times people don't tell the doctor everything, and it's inadvertent. They don't do it on purpose, mm-hmm. or they think they've done the right thing. I had a patient, it was very funny. She was an older woman, and the news had Love Canal all over the news and how dioxin had poisoned an entire city. Well, this patient was on digoxin. And she said, oh, I stopped taking that because of Love Canal. And I just thought it was so sweet. I said, no, it's a different drug. It's not the same thing. It's not poison. And so patients do a lot of things on their own. But now I think it adds another layer where actually on purpose they would be afraid to tell you something.
The connection between politics and medicine is, I think it's going to become deadly. That's one example. What about the newest one where they want psychiatrists to basically rat on their patients? I mean, it's gone beyond safety. It's about informing at this point. And so I don't ask certain questions of patients because I don't want to know the answer, because I don't want to put them potentially in a position of weakness. Now, there are questions on this meaningful use that, you know, do you really need to know this as a doctor? You know, do you have guns in your home? Do you vaccinate your children? Do you have a living will? I mean, these are questions that ENTs generally don't ask. But these are questions for pediatricians now. Hospitals have these whole databases of questions that have to be asked. There are even companies that do questionnaires for Medicare patients where all of this information is actually gathered. How many people live in your home? You know, personal information about your home life that doesn't really, it's your business. And I have a problem with that. It's about you giving up your information all over the place. Where does it stop?
Well, that's right. And even though they say when they're looking at this information that it's data gathering for safety and all this, it still has a name attached to it, that it is not anonymous. It's not random queries on the street where people might feel comfortable in saying, oh, yes, my husband beats me. People aren't going to say things when they know their name is attached to it.
It's true. And there's, and to me, that's another way that the doctor-patient relationship is being irrevocably or irretrievably damaged. If you can't tell your doctor everything that's going on with you, they will not be able to help you. And it's already been set up as an adversarial relationship with the insurance companies sitting square in the middle. Co-payments, co-insurances, you know, getting billed for things that you thought that you paid a premium for, which I totally get, but that the insurance arbitrarily decides will not be covered, or it's your, you have to pay for it. Those things have been going on for years now, and it's now just, I think it's reached a point that it's so intrusive that it's not worth having it. I think getting rid of third-party payer and having fee-for-service and doctors and patients making a deal with each other is really the best way to practice medicine the way it should be practiced at this point.
Absolutely. You are so on the button with that, that third-party payers have just perverted the whole system. And it's so sad. When my mother was living with us and I got a Medicare bill or a statement, and I called about it because it was some outrageous price for something. And the person on the other end of the line said, "Oh, don't worry, it's just a statement. You're not paying for it." And I, of course, told her, "Well, yes, I am, with my tax dollars." But this whole concept of, "Oh, I'm not really paying for it," that's what's driven the pricing up so high. And in the insurance business, they call it moral hazard, where when you aren't paying for it, you tend to overuse a service.
That's the crux, isn't it?
Yes. And the thing is, there are certain things. It's like psychiatrists. They always like the patient to pay. They had a feeling from way back when that therapy needed to be a two-way street, and the patient needed to fork over the money. Even if they were repaid by their insurance company, they needed to be in that transaction in order for the therapy to work.
So you have to have some skin in the game, basically, and be a partner in your care.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. And that partnership is what's being chipped away.
I agree with you. That's an excellent point. Let's take a small break, because I want to go into your article about the bundlers and the Medicare bundlers and bunglers when we come back. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Are you tired of taking medication to control your allergy symptoms? Do you suffer from uncontrollable asthma or eczema? Sublingual immunotherapy is a safe and effective alternative. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is committed to bringing the newest medical advances to their patients. With sublingual immunotherapy, you can now train your immune system to stop responding to environmental and food allergies. No more shots, no more trips to the doctor, and freedom from taking daily allergy medication. The drops are simply placed under the tongue 3 times a day. Both children and adults can be treated. It is safe and cost-effective. Call Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center today at 404-591-9100 for more information or to make an appointment. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, 2 blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Mention that you heard about sublingual immunotherapy on Radio Sandy Springs and get free allergy testing.
This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and I invite you to join us every Friday at 11 o'clock for Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that eating too little and skipping meals can actually cause you to gain weight? When you do not take enough calories in, your body can actually stop you from losing weight. Your body works best when it is adequately fueled. If you fail to eat enough, your metabolism will slow down and your body will become stressed and actually hold on to fat. This will lead to muscle loss instead of fat. Exercise and lightweight training will increase endurance and muscle mass and will boost both your metabolism and your sense of well-being. Eat 3 well-rounded meals a day containing a lean protein, fiber, and a complex carbohydrate such as a whole grain, with 2 snacks, such as fruits or nuts. These will promote healthy weight loss that is long-term. Prior to starting an exercise program, remember to see your doctor if you have any medical problems. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking today with a special guest, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. She's a lawyer as well as a doctor, board-certified anesthesiologist, and she's a professor and a member of Physicians and Surgeons Association. And we were talking before the break about Medicare and basically about how third party and the government inserts themselves into the doctor-patient relationship and it's damaging healthcare or the delivery of healthcare. And one of the things that you wrote recently is something called Medicare, the bundlers are coming, the bunglers are coming. And I love this article because it just highlighted the nonsense, all of this, we need to control costs, but it's always on the backs of doctors and patients. So can you tell us exactly what is a bundling and why do you think Medicare is doing this and what do you think the outcome is going to be? Oh, hold on. I think we lost her. So hold on one second. I'm trying to get Dr. Singleton back on the phone.
We lost her.
We lost her. Okay. One second while we put her back on, and then I'll ask the question again. This is an interesting day. Hi, Dr. Singleton. Are you back? Are you back on?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. We're having a technical glitch day, but I had this long question to you, but I'll shorten it. You wrote an article that I thought was really awesome because it really just highlighted where we're going with Medicare, and it's called Medicare, the bundlers are coming, the bunglers are coming. What is your take on the effect of healthcare going to be? First of all, what is bundling, so our guests know, and how is that going to further affect the doctor-patient relationship in healthcare?
What? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. What bundling is it's just like what they've done for hospitals, where the hospital is paid one price for each diagnosis, no matter what treatments were given to the patient. And they want to do the same thing with doctors. And it's starting off as so-called demonstration projects, and people can sign up to do it, and the various pilot programs. That's how DRG started, and then it became the law of the land, basically, and insurers started doing the same thing. So the concept is that physicians will give quality care at a reasonable price because they are going to be paid the same price no matter what they do. And efficiency and quality are supposed to be the keys. These things don't necessarily mesh, that it could be true that in 90% of the patients, if you do exactly the same thing and give exactly the same medication and come up with the same low price, that patient will do just fine. What about the other 10% that don't fit the mold? And these are the patients that start to suffer in programs like these. Sadly, there's really no evidence that DRGs worked to either save money or improve quality. And one of the things that bothers me when they come up with these programs is they're starting on a basic assumption that we aren't already trying to give quality care.
Mm-hmm.
That's our goal, is to give the best care possible, however we have to do it. And when you start off with the idea that you're doing it for the money and the reason that you've ordered that test is because you want to make more money, which I always find amusing. Mm-hmm. It's not like the doctor owns the lab, so the doctor's not going to make any money off of it. To me, it's demeaning to physicians and dangerous for patients. Because we don't know, again, the long-term kind of underlying psychological effect. I don't know. I haven't been talking to young medical students whether their minds think differently from ours now that they've been trained in these sorts of ideas. We just don't know ultimately what's going to happen with this. And the biggest thing that bothers me are the standards that they set as their quality measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the measurements of quality is the patient's quote-unquote functional status. This bothers me in Medicare patients, because what if the functional status is low, but that patient loves their life, they love their family, and perhaps their functional status can't be improved. But does that mean we shouldn't still continue to keep them alive and keep them alive by the best means possible? That's something that the doctor and patient decide. And who's to decide whose functional status is good or bad? Each patient has their own life, and they're living their life the way they want to, and it really bothers me, because this is where you start to creep into the idea that, well, is it more cost-effective to just let them go, and then it will make the statistics turn out better? I don't know. I don't want to go there. I don't even want to think that that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think there's evidence that it is happening. There's a lot of movement and talk towards hospice and palliative care. That's one of the things that Medicare is pushing, and especially with the elders in the hospital with multiple diseases, there's a big movement towards give them some morphine and send them off to a hospice, as opposed to let's do what the patient and the family may want. Sometimes it's being done without telling the patients and families. Did you hear about the Liverpool pathway in England? Basically, it's euthanasia for elders and children who with multiple medical problems that their system deems to be not cost-effective to treat. And they've literally put them on a path, and it's mercenary. It's not medicine. It's just heinous. They withdraw their food and water, and they wait for them to die. And that's now being looked at in the British Parliament, because it wasn't hidden. It's been done for years. But I think a doctor finally had enough of it and actually wrote an article and brought the whole thing to light. If our system is based, or we're looking at that system as the template for ours, as Dr. Berwick, who was head of Medicaid, Medicare, wanted to do, then we're looking at the same pathway, technically. And that is frightening. I don't want to be put in a position where I'm withdrawing services from somebody. No one can tell you what someone's quality of life is. That's between the doctor, the patient, and the family, and not
That's
the government.
Right. I can give you some good news.
Please.
There was a great class action lawsuit against the government that they were not paying for people to go to skilled nursing facilities. Again, our famous improvement of function,
mm-hmm.
that they had an improvement standard that said if the patient wasn't going to have a good potential for improvement, they would deny their need for skilled nursing care. Well, various groups got together, and this is a message for people that if we speak out, we can change things, just like this British doctor, that the Multiple Sclerosis Society and a Parkinson's group, Paralyzed Veterans, was big class action saying that this standard had to stop, that just because somebody might not improve doesn't mean that they still don't need skilled nursing.
Mm-hmm.
The government did not want that to go to court, so they did do a settlement agreement saying that they would not use that standard anymore. So this is a step in the right direction. I'd like the next one to actually go to court, then more people would know about it.
Exactly.
This is one of the reasons people write these settlement agreements, because then they're quieter and people don't realize that that's what they're doing. I'm sure there's plenty of patients out there that had no idea that there was a standard that you had to have the potential to improve before they'd pay for a skilled nursing facility.
I didn't know that standard existed either.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the other thing, a point I'd like to make for the listeners is most statutes, the laws, don't contain kind of the down and dirty part of what's really going to happen. They set the basics of what the law is supposed to do and set some general tenets in the law. It's the regulations, the handbooks, that tell the tale. Because there's nothing in Medicare about improvement standards and functional status and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Then when they write the regulations, that's when they put in all the gory little details. And we never see those. Unless you're practicing law or this is what you do, is sit around reading regulations all day, you'll never know what they are. And, of course, that's on purpose, because who writes the regulations? The executive branch of the government. So who's ever running the presidency gets to have his people write all the regulations.
Wow, that's a lot of power.
And it is a lot of power. These regulations sometimes are almost more powerful than the law.
It's true. And I've noticed not only that they're having regulations, but they're putting in place sticks that make sure that if you don't follow the regulations, there's going to be some pain. You're going to be out of practice, in jail, or bankrupt, or maybe all three, if you don't follow that.
And that's right.
Yeah, doctors have been really getting hammered with regulations. That's why one of the reasons I left Medicare, I was afraid I was going to run afoul of a regulation that I didn't even know existed. And there's no excuse. You're guilty until proven innocent.
That's right. That's right. And that's how the Stark self-referral laws were. Doctors were horrible people, lesser forms of life, until proven otherwise.
Well, you know what? We need to take our voice back as doctors. We need to encourage our patients to speak up for themselves, because if they do that, then they'll be working alongside of us instead of us working against each other.
That's right. That is, it's so such good advice. And patients' voices, excuse me, will be heard. They just have to speak up.
Now, unfortunately, we're out of time, but is there any way, if our patients want to reach you, that they can find you?
Yes. One, our organization, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org, is a good place to go. And hello?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the phone has a little crack. Anyway, and you can contact me through there. And there's amazing information on that website about what's happening with medicine.
I want to thank you so much for coming on. I hope you'll do it again at some point.
Oh, I hope you'll have me.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Doctor.